Liberals released 2030 emissions reduction plan and its $9 billion of climate cult liturgy. Randy Hillier arrested and released on bail in Ottawa this week. And Canadians begin seeking recourse for unconstitutional COVID restrictions. But the question we ask is, will the courts deliver justice? Hi, I'm Michael Thiessen, and that guy over there, good looking, is Tim Tyso, and this is Liberty Dispatch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour.
Bonhoeffer spoke by radio to a national audience. He delivered one of the first public criticisms of the new chancellor.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome back to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. It's good to be with you on the show again. Mike, nice to have you back in the chair again. It's good to get back up to speed, and compliments just emanating, always boosting my confidence. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us. If you're watching on Rumble at the Liberty Coalition Canada channel, please subscribe there. We've had tons of new subscribers there, and our Rumble channel is just bumping. So thanks to everybody who have been commenting, sharing, watching, and tuning in on the Rumble channel. We appreciate that. If you are listening via podcast, we're glad to have you as well. And you don't get to enjoy all the scintillating visual effects, but nonetheless, we are glad that you're with us. And please share and follow the show if it is on podcast. And there you can also leave a review for us. 5 stars would be ideal, but we don't want you to lie or exaggerate too much. So we're thankful for all the reviews. And I was looking over them the other day, and it's just encouraging. We appreciate that. I was screenshotting some of the more salty ones to Mike and Andrew, but we do appreciate all your feedback, dear listeners. It's great to have you. And I want to, Mike, in reciprocation of your kindness, I want to promote Mike's show, Open Mic with Michael Thiessen, where he is taking on and hosting some of Canada's cultural savants, scientists, philosophers, and many other highly interesting guests. And we wanted to take that interview portion of this show that has been so popular and give it its own platform. So subscribe to Michael, Open Mic with Michael Thiessen. You can find that by searching Liberty Coalition on your podcast catcher. It's networked with this show, Liberty Dispatch. So you can pick up both of the shows with that search. And of course, give Mike all the thumbs up there that you would have given this show. So it is good. It's good. It's nice to see just our listenership broaden. And don't forget that you can also subscribe to our email list at libertycoalitioncanada.com. And you should check out our new website if you haven't seen it. It's very sharp. And Mike, you look dapper on it. Looks like somebody broke into your home with a lot of makeup and a nice camera. So it's nice to nice to see that come up live. And it's got all our shows and content there. You can subscribe there. You can also become a monthly financial partner there at the donate tab. And we appreciate everyone who is doing that. And we do think this is going to make a long-term impact on Canadians. So yes, this show has been crammed with news analysis and things are coming so fast. We had to cut off some stories we wanted to do today. We're going to have to cover them on Tuesday, Mike, because they are just coming in so fast. So how are you feeling?
And that's particularly, Tim, the reasoning for the new show. As the news reel, as you know, the news cycle has just been so increased, and we've got some fantastic personalities and news junkies and researchers and Christian minds ready to join Liberty Dispatch. We just felt the need to separate my interview segment. You know, really, I sit and listen to individuals from all across the world talk about culture and politics and worldview issues and ethical issues. And so we just thought we'd hive off those interviews into another show so that the Liberty Dispatch could keep going. So again, everybody, you know, please subscribe to Open Mic with Michael Thiessen. You can do that on Apple. And then, of course, you can subscribe via our Liberty Coalition Canada Rumble channel. So, you know, thanks everybody for listening to all of our shows. That's the reason why we've just kind of separated those out. I started with the interviews, Tim. That's, you know, you and I had passion for this show, but what really got what really got our news analysis going was me sitting down and talking to doctors and nurses and people who had been coerced and trying to just investigate a little bit. And so I like to do that, and I hope our listeners will continue to appreciate that as Liberty Dispatch develops and morphs. We've got some great, we saw last week, we had Matthew Halleck, and we saw, our good friend, Pastor Andrew DiBartolo come on the show. They're going to come on next week. People are going to see them more often on this show with us, because it's just really important to keep the news analysis going. So with that being said, I'll go back to you, Tim. What are we covering today,
bud? Yeah, so the federal government released on March 29th, a couple days ago, Justin Trudeau from his hotel room in Vancouver, which was at the time, I believe, surrounded by protesters, but he didn't seem to mind. His demeanor was undiminished. But they released their 2030 emissions reduction plan, which was subtitled Canada's Next Steps to Clean Air and a Strong Economy. Just as for content, you're already laughing, Mike. Wait, you don't. I think that you're already laughing, and we're going to show why it's true, and we're all. Well, let's all laugh together, collectively. Let's let out one large chuckle, and then we'll try to be serious about analyzing.
I'm just laughing at the fact that they have the gall to say next steps towards clean air. Like, have you ever lived in Canada?
No, it's the cleanest air in the world by 1,000%. So, it's the, yeah, I know. Right, because there's one thing Canada struggles with, it's clean air.
Clean air and water. We've got a shortage of water. That's our major problem. We have no fresh water in this country.
It's a struggle. So this economic emissions reduction plan is actually a framework that has been released in follow-up, and it's made to uphold the commitments that were codified into law as per the Canadian Net Zero Emissions Accountability Act, because accountability is what's going to get us there, which actually became law last summer, June 29th, 2021. So off the top, you in your introduction, I think, wisely described this as a religious liturgy of the COVID cult. And I think when you say religious, we mean that in the worst sense. You and I are religious men. We don't have inherent negative views of religion. We participate in the world's only true religion. Sorry if that's offensive, but not sorry. But this is what we are now describing, I think unapologetically, as an actual extension of a religious worldview. These are not just scientific assertions or policy assertions. This is becoming a religious worldview. And I say that because it is a morality and it is a code of ethics that is being imposed and foisted upon its congregants, Canadians, without, and this is why I mean religion in the negative sense, in the maybe more mythological sense, that it is being imposed without any rationale, without any robust facts, without any grounding. You know, in the Christian worldview, we have the Bible that says we were eyewitnesses to these things. We have an eyewitness account. There is real rationale in the Bible to believe the historic events that are written. Whereas here, we're actually just being shown this new religious liturgy, but we're not given the grounding for it. We're not given the proof that this is what is needed.
Tim, I think what you're trying to get at is this is as much or more a step of faith for individuals to accept. Yes. And then that faith is externalized into religious fervor and very specific actions. And actually, it's actually codified into law. You know, Tim, Matthew in the studio before we came on just really made that first point made us aware of that first point. That, you know, this is actually the framework that is a follow-up to a law that was enacted June 29th, 2021. Like, folks, that piece of information cannot be understated. Because, Tim, think about that. If the Liberals had have lost the election, it is most likely that the very first thing that the Conservatives would have done, or that the PPC, you know, if we had really had the purple wave, could have done federally, would be to change this law. But now Justin Trudeau has 3 years of, he has a supply and confidence agreement. So where confidence and supply policies are supplied back and forth. So now this is law to be acted out. And so it's not like Canadians are going to be able to say, hey, wait a minute, you got to stop and talk about that more. No, this is just their framework to uphold the law that they already passed. And now they have 3 years to work this out in our country with zero accountability and at the legal level. And Tim, this is why, you know, people are going to hear about this next week, and we're going to talk about it a bit on the podcast, but this is why we are releasing a video in the next 2 weeks called Living Without Oil and Gas, A Pipe Dream. We at Liberty Coalition Canada have seen all of this coming down the pike. And so we produced a video a number of weeks ago, and it's just ready for release. And it's because of the concern that this religious fervor and legal framework is now being hoisted upon Canadians, not even thinking about what Canadians actually need in order to live in this cold climate. So back to you, Tim, like lead us into some of the details going on in this new framework.
Yes. So this Net Zero Accountability Act obviously is a binding piece of legislation that directs the federal government to introduce legislation to reach the goals set out in the Net Zero so-called Accountability Act. Among some of the things proposed here in the emissions reduction plan is the forced transition to 100% electric car sales by 2035. We're not talking 2050 or 2060 here. We're talking about 100% new car sales by 2035 are going to be electric by this code. We're talking about building code modifications and retrofit laws and incentives, and this is all driven by incentives. We're going to talk about that in a minute. For home efficiency, so we're talking about building code. I was in the building industry. I know how many building code modifications are there because of lobbyists. So the insulation companies can lobby the government and say, hey, if you bump the insulation code by, you know, 10 R value, we're going to sell 25% more insulation by definition. I mean, I know how this works. So to say that building codes are going to be upgraded, that's going to be directly linked with tech companies and suppliers that are going to directly benefit from the cost of these upgrades.
Tim, I want to comment on that really quickly. Yeah. And folks, just so you don't miss that, what that is a very simple bait and switch. And what I mean by that is they bait the government with lobby. So they switch it to the consumer. And basically, instead of you insulating your house and getting this great incentive because you're getting paid by the government to do it, what you're really doing is you're paying a supplier for their agenda. And it moves towards government regulation and government imposition to use a specific product. And so this is just a way for lobbyists to make money that is government supported or government in endorsed. And again, who pays for that? You pay that in your taxes. So every time an incentive is given, it's coming out of someone else's pocketbook. It's not free money.
I wish it were in taxes, but often we're actually paying for it with inflation. So we're paying for it with the diminishment in value of our net assets. But that's a whole other a podcast episode. But of course, you make the point. The government is the one that's backstopping this whole thing. This is not private money. This is public money that is buffered by billions in bureaucratic spending. So you need staff members to manage these programs. So this is why the cost to deliver a program from the government is tenfold, I don't know technically, but what it would be at the private level, because there's a whole bureaucracy to administer it. But just to continue on with specifics, we're talking about building code modifications and retrofit modifications for home efficiency and even commercial building efficiency. We're talking about incentives to clean up manufacturing. We are talking about a reduction or cap in oil production, which is what we're going to talk about next week, and with the video that you put together, Mike, which is fantastic. I loved it. Watched it this morning. We're talking about farming initiatives. So we're talking about reducing farm carbon emissions. Obviously, farming a backbone of life in Canada in general, and so we're talking about an all-encompassing religion that is to direct and modify aspects of every part of Canadian life. And this is again, the religious fervor here is literally in black and white. I counted, and the word in the report, in the one-page report, the word ambition or ambitious appears four times. So they're telegraphing to you that this is aggressive, that it is ideological, that it is not necessarily following economic trends or production trends and trying to augment them. They are really going out in front of, in an ambitious way that is, by every metric, it's beyond the grasp of the Canadian economy, right?
The way that people use the word ambitious, you know exactly what it's like. If you're in the room with somebody and you know them really well and you trust them and they say, this is ambitious, you're cautious in a trusting relationship.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah,
okay.
At the best of
so
times.
They're signaling to me that this might be unrealistic and that they might be overshooting. Now, you take a liar like Justin Trudeau, who will stand up in the EU and lie about his citizens, who won't act diplomatically towards any type of peaceful protest for the last 2 years. You take that type of guy, and when he uses the word ambitious, it literally means you already used the word, Tim. It literally means extreme. It literally means we know that these are extreme measures. We know that these are going to be unpleasant measures. We know that this is going to be taxing, excuse the pun. We know that this is going to be difficult, but ideologically we're driving forward. Like whenever someone says, whenever someone I don't trust says, man, this is super ambitious, the first image that comes to my house is, oh, that house is going to crumble. They're building that way too fast. They're not using the right materials. They don't have a good plan. And that guy, don't buy that house, you know? And so to take the title clean air quality, health consequences, nothing even related to air quality is marshaled to defend these measures, but they're using this language in order to sell their program here.
A plan toward clean air, but there is not one mention in the entire report anything related to the risks of our air quality. And we're
going to talk about that next. We're going to talk about that in a podcast to come as we talk about this further.
Yep. So I want to shift here to a little bit of the consequences of what is already taking place in the world related to policies like this. We're talking about this report alone. What is it? It's costed at $9 billion, which you can basically guarantee that means it's at least $18 billion. Okay. The Trudeau Liberals are notoriously bad at math, or at least dishonest in what things are going to cost. They promised 2 years of $20 billion budgets and a balanced budget by 2019. They've gone on to spend $500 billion in deficit spending. So $9 billion, it's at least $20 billion, let's say, for this plan once it actually rolls out. And it will, because there's no way to defeat this. There's no way to repeal these laws. So we're talking about spending billions in dollars to move everybody to an electric car. We're talking about shutting down and limiting oil production to make room for so-called renewable energy, which, by the way, oil is renewable. Okay, I just want to go on record on this podcast and saying that you're being gaslit from square one. Oil is renewable, just like every other energy source. Even these alternative energy sources, they all require an online fossil fuel backup system, whether it be natural gas, oil, or even nuclear. They all require a backup system, because wind and solar and geothermal, all of these alternative energy sources are unreliable. They're not enough. They're great to augment, but they're not enough. And so we're talking about shifting the whole economy, the whole resource economy, onto a system that by all known metrics is unreliable. It's insufficient to actually do anything for us. And as things are unfolding in Ukraine right now with Russia and people are sanctioning Russia, Germany just yesterday triggered, this is from Disclosed TV, they triggered the first stage of their gas emergency plan to secure supplies. Vice Chancellor Habeck appeals to consumers, save energy. So Germany has already triggered an energy emergency state. Why? Because 40% of their natural gas comes from Russia, that they're trying to sanction and politically punish for whatever's going on in Ukraine. And they're in an energy crisis. And so at the tail end of winter here, they're being told, you need to cut back. You need to save energy. I mean, literally, we're talking about resource shortages. And look, we all love, you know, we've all grown up on Earth Day and clean air and clean water. And it, what a privilege it is. Are you ready for this kind of energy crisis? Are you ready for the liberals to put out a tweet saying, you know, your heating has to cut back 20% or 50%? You know, we're putting gasoline quotas on your cars. We talked about this in another episode. But this is what Canadians don't understand, is that these are the actual consequences of moving away from energy sovereignty, from outsourcing it.
So, Tim, I was trying to find quickly online a PragerU University or a PragerU video that explained the energy crisis in Texas, you know, when that really cold snap yep. came in and then there was an energy crisis.
By the way, we are still struggling to get things like ABS plumbing fixtures up here in Canada almost 2 years later. We still don't have the building supplies that we need from that Texas crisis because they make like 90% of the ABS that goes out to North America. So you see how quickly this can dramatically, if you're going to build a new house and you can't get ABS, sorry. Anyway, carry on.
No, it's a really important point. Yeah. But the issue, though, that the video brings up, and I thought it was really good research, was that it's to this point that you were making. When you shut down your actual infrastructure, like talking about moving towards renewable energy, people don't understand. It's like when you start shutting off the oil tap and when you start shutting down the industry, these renewable energies, these new technologies, they do not have the capacity, the surge capacity. And so what ends up so it wasn't like Texas was out of oil. It wasn't like Texas did not have the capability to get the energy that was needed. It was because they had already made movements towards renewable systems, and those systems failed, but you couldn't bring online your oil systems. And so I encourage everybody to go to PragerU and to just investigate that video if they want the hard data. But this is a type of thing. So when Germany is starting to try to secure supplies, they're being wise, because if you don't secure supply, then when you get in a difficulty, it is the people who pay for it. So all of these images of people out of Texas without heat, you know, number one, that's people actually suffering in a first world nation, suffering because of, like, up here in Canada, we were all looking down going, what are you talking about? We know what snowstorms are. So now we have the opposite. We have a prime minister in a cold climate trying to suggest that we could potentially get there when we've got winters that make Texas, that situation in Texas look like a day in the life of a winter. Oh, wait, it was a day in the life of a winter, and we have real winters. And now we have an ideologue, a high priest of the green agenda, telling Canadians that we're going to be able to move away from oil to heat our homes. It's really absurd. I encourage people to go to that PragerU video.
And these crises are not a result of, as your civic leaders will have you believe, they're not a result of war in a foreign country per se. That's a great pretense to say, well, COVID, you know, we didn't know COVID was going to happen. Or, you know, Russia invaded Ukraine. I mean, what can we do? We would have never known. But the fact is, Western nations have been trying to outsource their emissions production to second or third world countries for decades now, where basically it's okay for third world countries to pollute. But in Canada, we need to ban plastic straws. Like, the absurdity is just through the roof. These crises are being artificially manufactured by policies, not by circumstances outside of our control. And it's almost as bad in Spain. And I just want to take you to this Financial Times article here that that outlines the situation there. Spain urges the EU, European Union, to act on soaring energy prices. That word is not moderate. We're talking about soaring energy prices. In an interview with the Financial Times, Teresa Ribera, Spain's deputy prime minister for the environment, suggested that high prices and charges could provoke a backlash against carbon-cutting initiatives. She said, "We are in the eye of the hurricane in the most turbulent years of this transformation to cleaner energy." So if you think this is just, you know, walking across the meadow to greener pastures, literally, this is what is taking place. She's saying we're in the eye of a hurricane in the most turbulent years of this transition. Prices are soaring. They are more than triple what they were in 2008 in Spain. And she's saying, oh, when people start to realize what these policies actually do, they're going to ditch them. So what does she do? She goes to the European Union and she says, you need to cap energy prices. We need subsidies. We need legislative interference, because the renewable energies, the demand is outpacing supply and energy prices are through the roof. Why? Because there is no access to cheap, reliable energy. And so what does she do? She protects the measure. She says, I'm afraid these gas prices are going, or these energy prices are going to create a backlash against our green initiatives. And we can't have that. That's sacrosanct. So we need to protect that. So EU, can we have some money? You can see this whole thing is riding on the back of this monstrous plowing machine that is the government. They have the borrowing power. They have the printing power. This is all backstopped by government subsidy, which comes out of your pocket. There is no viable meaning has any chance of lasting. There is no viable plan for a green economy as is framed by the Liberal government. You can have oil production that is lower emission and lower pollution. Those things are great. We should lower pollution from cars. We should, you know, raise fuel efficiency in cars as far as we can. I drive a 20-year-old V8 and the gas mileage is horrendous. And I just had a rental that got like 700 kilometers to the tank. And at the tank's
half
the
size. Dude, you just got canceled. Like, you should look over your shoulder for the carbon police to knock on your door right now. How dare you say that?
Fuel efficiency is good. I'm going to go on the record and say that. I'm all for fuel efficiency. But these ideologically driven policymakers, instead of looking the issue in the face and saying, this is horrible, my people are suffering, they can't afford energy, instead they run off to the bureaucracy and say, you know, we're going to have to subsidize this. We're going to have to pay. We're going to have to pay for it.
And there's two things people need to listen really hard into that, Tim. And the first thing is simply that the people don't want it. High prices at the fuel pump is very hard on the individual family. We know that cheap energy is what has given so many people freedom and liberty. It's given them individual wealth. So we know that going after an ideological premise that's both unrealistic, unneeded, and certainly unwanted will lead to a lack of liberty for people. They can't afford to drive. That's not offering liberty. That's limiting. And so this has real impact. And again, you know, back to my point that I made earlier, you know, these mindless policies destroy supply chains and they make it unaffordable to heat your home and to travel freely, especially in cold climates. But your story up there is from Spain. Like, look at Spain's climate compared to Canada. So look at, we know that.
I just want to point out one thing from the top, because you mentioned what people want. It's not wanted. The first line of this reduction emissions plan says Canadians have been clear about what they want: clean air and good jobs and a healthy environment and a strong economy. So Trudeau's like, well, this is what you all want, so here it comes. But yes, we want those things. But
do we?
Well, yeah, we do. We want a healthy environment. We want a strong economy. We want clean air. We want good jobs.
Well, between a healthy environment and a clean environment. And frankly, I've never asked Justin Trudeau. The reality of it is
we want these things, but then he moves on to say, so we're going to deliver them, and this is the way we're going to do it. And that's where the whole thing falls apart. We have evidence that these things destroy the economy. They destroy prosperity. They don't create lasting good jobs because there's no, as I said, there's no viability. So they can't do it. But of course, that's how it begins. This is, we know all Canadians want this. So anyway, off we go. Right?
That's just Trudeau's tagline.
We don't want to freeze to death. No.
Trudeau's tagline is always, I'm going to give you what you want because you voted for me, which means that you want whatever I want.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know what? Shame on Canadians for voting him in. Honestly, if you voted Liberal, you know, you have invited.
This is partially your fault.
Yeah. Like this is on you, the tanking of our economy and the oil industry that we have in our country and liberty and freedom, because of course you're going to have to move into digital ID and you're going to have to move into movement, you know, you're going to have to move into movement licenses, you know, electric cars are movement licenses in and of themselves. Like, think how far you can go in a gas operated vehicle and how readily you can get your gasoline across this country. You can't get that in the same way with an electric car. And just watch the, you know, Top Gear for 15 minutes or their new show, Grand Tour. You know, just watch it, you know, just let Jeremy go at clean energy for a few minutes there, and you'll understand that this, like, this is movement restriction, and it's planned. We talk about this in the video that we put out. Like, this is right out of the World Economic Forum. This is Trudeau being an exemplary student of the World Economic Forum, and it is applying to Canadians, and it's tragic policy.
And has anyone made one iota of mention of what the carbon emissions of a lithium mine are? Have you ever seen a lithium ion mine? Are lithium ion batteries, are they renewable? No, they are mined out of the ground. If you've ever owned a cell phone, you know how long a lithium ion battery lasts after charges and charges and charges. Eventually it stops holding a charge and it goes away. There's a great video of a Danish dude or something whose Tesla battery needed to be replaced at a cost of $27,000. So he strapped the whole car in dynamite and blew it up to put out on, but there. Where does electricity come from? It comes from coal production, coal burning. I mean, this is so broken. This is a curtain in front of an absolute disaster in the back, but they're going to drape it all in. If you drive an electric car, you can feel good about yourself, period. Doesn't matter where it came from. Doesn't matter where the mines are. Doesn't matter how long your battery lasts or the economic or the environmental impact of creating that battery. Doesn't matter. And as a hilarious postscript to this whole shenanigans is the fact that in the same
so many
week,
S words that you could have used and you controlled yourself to get to shenanigans. Good for you.
Oh,
brother.
I'm glad you picked up on that. The industry leaders from green tech supporting industries in Canada came out this week in a standing committee for industry with the Liberal government. Glencore Canada's vice president of Sudbury Integrated Nickel Operations, Peter Xavier, told the Commons Industry that a lack of predictability has stood in the way of attracting investment and making Canada a leader in clean tech. So nickel, all the other minerals that are mined in Canada, in Ontario specifically, the federal government is already pushing away investors. Already scaring off investment. Any possibility of viability is already being sabotaged. Why? Because of moving goalposts, changing the standards, going too aggressively, being too ambitious. Because it has to make sense for people. It has to make sense for mining companies. It has to make sense for investors. And if it's purely driven on whatever number you pick on the dartboard of emissions reductions by whatever year you spin on the magic wheel,
It's going to fall apart. And this is driven by the architect of this plan is a guy who climbed the CN Tower to protest climate change. I don't think he knows how the climate works, to be honest. I think he's passionate about it, Stephen Guibeau. He's passionate about it, but he's absolutely blinded by his religious fervor, and he will prove absolutely disastrous in achieving any of these goals. It's going to be far worse than the utopia that he promises. So that's my take on emissions reductions.
Now, I want to try to connect this to our Christian worldview a little bit. The reality of it is there's what people need to see really clearly, and it's coming hard and fast now. The minds at work behind the scenes, you know, like the World Health Organization and the World Economic Forum and whatever actors are really pushed on us, the pandemic have now transitioned. The UN has transitioned. They've released videos like of an animated dinosaur using the guy's voice from How to Train Your Dragon to, or at least I think it was the guy from How You Train Your Dragon. It was Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Chance of Meatballs, yes.
In order to have like a dinosaur come back to life and tell the world, you know, don't become extinct. And the reason why you're going to become extinct is because of these green, because we're not moving to green energy fast enough. And I want to touch based upon that from our Christian worldview. So number one, we've been given the mandate to produce. Production has always been a command in scripture, utilizing the natural resources of this world that God has given us to be able to produce in order to sell, in order to feed our families, in order to provide shelter for our families. Production has always seemed to be good. And then, of course, on the other side of that, you have exploitation, and that is problematic. And so Christians, we live in between a world where we say, yes, we need to produce, but we need to produce with excellence and care. Now, somewhere in the middle of that, we have to discern then when someone's just selling us falsehood. And that's what's happening here. We're going to dive deep into our emissions in another episode. But the reality of it is Canada has clean air. Canada has tons of clean energy. And this is a globalist program to keep pushing us towards government dependence and specifically towards movement restrictions. So you have to be careful not to get suckered into this whole apocalyptic image, because again, we have an apocalyptic image, and that is when the Lord deems it right, he's going to judge this earth. Christ is going to return in bodily form. This world will be consumed and remade. The heavens and earth will be remade. And so it will be on God's timing, not on man's timing. So you're never going to get man destroying this earth because of emissions prior to the judgment of the Lord. And so go out and produce with excellence. As you know, Tim, we're going to be able to use technology, but we have to be careful not to listen to people who are promoting a completely other worldview for complete political agendas. Like, Justin Trudeau saying out loud on camera that he admired China because they could move, their dictatorship could move faster towards a green economy. Like, he's either never been to China, which I have been, and I've seen their green economy. And furthermore, Canada's never going to produce anything anywhere near that China is doing. So all of these accords are just a joke for Canadians. And our previous conservative government saw that and removed us from the Paris Accord. So you know, Christians, we have to be careful not to be duped here that it is virtuous to take care of our creation. It is not, therefore, then evil to harvest a field of trees in order to make paper and to have a plan then to replant those fields and have a cycle of production whereby we're not just eternally consuming, but we are managing. And that's really a much more balanced perspective than this radical ideology being hoisted upon us. Okay, we've been on this long enough. Tim, take us to our next story.
Yeah, so Randy Hillier was arrested earlier this week on charges related to the Freedom Convoy that took place in Ottawa earlier this year. Obviously, we've talked a lot about the Freedom Convoy. I think our listeners are familiar with the event. But he was released on bail, and I think it was bail in excess of $30,000, pretty significant. And he was charged, and some of the conditions of his bail were that he not post on social media, which his Twitter account has already been completely permanently deleted from the censorship overlords, but that he not post on any form of social media anything about masks or lockdowns. So he's not allowed to say anything about that on social media as part of his bail conditions. And to me, this is a great example of is a paradigm for what is taking place in Canada. That's all it is. Steve Bell, interim Ottawa police chief, promised that they would be pursuing after the fact, after the convoy had cleared out, they would be pursuing charges for those who sympathized with and aided in the convoy. So here that is. They've gone after, they're going through social media, they're going through bank records. They're, you know, I had friends of mine whose accounts were frozen. They are punishing people who are no longer obviously a part of this movement. And so there he is. You've also got speech laws. He can't talk about certain things on his social media. And so this is just a great paradigm of where things are going politically. He's also a sitting member of the provincial legislature in Ontario. So to muzzle his speech is a very significant breach of his human right and his public duty. So there's so many twisted elements to this. Now, again, all the charges, we'll have to find out what happens in court. I'm not saying Randy didn't do anything wrong in any of this whole thing. I know that there's a lot of videos out there of a lot of interesting things, but overall, we're talking about a person who stood up for and was outspoken on behalf of his citizens and not just his own constituents, but all Canadians, to uphold their freedom to assemble, their freedom to speak, their freedom to travel, all of which were punishingly restricted during the COVID saga here in Canada. And now he's paying for it. He's going to the judicial system in order to answer for that. And so it is an ominous omen over Canada for sure to see him arrested and released with these conditions.
Yeah, so let's talk about the conditions for a minute. So again, why can't normal Canadians talk about whether masks are effective or not? Like that's the most ridiculous premise on earth. And who is it that a judge would add that to a bail hearing? You're not allowed to talk about masks. Oh, like we're not allowed to talk about steel masks. Like what if the masks are airtight? And it's just utterly ridiculous that we would be limited from talking about such a premise. But again, the mask is the mark of the beast. The mask is the mark of the state. The mask is the symbol of subordination. And so they want to protect their symbol of subordination, just like the communist square, just like the Star of David. You know, this is what the World Health Organization and all of the crony, you know, medical bureaucrats that have been following them, that's your symbol. That and the vaccination are your symbol of obedience. And so of course they're going to silence him on that. Look, I kind of want to transition this conversation. Randy and I were meeting quite regularly up through the fall, and after the Christmas time, you know, we were not meeting as often. And then of course the trucker convoy came. You know, first of all, I just want to empathize with Randy's family. I can't imagine what they're going through right now. And Randy's family, we just want to tell you guys all that we love you and support you. And we all haven't been meeting that much together, but we are behind you. And then secondly, I just want to bring to everyone's attention, the first words I ever heard out of Randy Hillier's mouth when he invited us to a protest in November of 2020. And I remember specifically Randy saying, look, he was talking about the provincial government and he was talking about the federal government. He said, look, they're on a train that they don't know how to get off. Now, I think they knew exactly how they were going to get off and when they were going to get off. And none of us just could imagine how ridiculous it sounded that the World Health Organization attached to the United Nations was really dictating the politics of our country. Like it was hard for us to imagine. Now it's not hard to imagine at all. They're, you know, whatever the World Health Organization says, the United Nations countries usually follow, and our prime minister follows them passionately. But I just want to give you an example of how we're not off the train and how we, everything that Randy has promised, prophesied, warned us about has come true. And I just want to highlight today that, you know, still today in our country, unvaccinated people are not allowed to fly or go on rail. Canada's vaccine mandate, which took effect, and this comes from a CBC article recently, I believe is March 23rd. Canadians' vaccine mandate, which took off on November 21st to boost vaccination rates. Okay, right there, boom. It was a vaccine mandate in order to coerce people to get vaccinated. Prevents unvaccinated Canadians from boarding a commercial plane or train in Canada to both domestic and international destinations. Now that COVID-19 restrictions are fast disappearing, some unvaccinated Canadians question why the federal government still maintains the mandate. Yeah, of course we're asking that question. We're asking that question because it was ludicrous in the first place, and now it is punishment. Now it is going, you know, they have no medical evidence to go out and say that these are needed. But here's what the chief public officer, Dr. Theresa Tam, continues to say. Ottawa is reviewing its mandates for both travelers and federal workers with an eye of dropping them. Oh, thank you. Thank you for maybe offering us freedom sometime. But then she suggested that the current resurgence of COVID cases globally could delay that plan. So is it cases in Canada? No, it's cases globally. This is someone who's using the global our ability to communicate to people around the world, like the global reach that we have, to still punish Canadians. This is what she said, quote, "The potential of the Omicron resurgence, particularly the subtype BA2, can still occur." So I think this is just waiting to see what happens with the situation, she said in the House of Commons back, I believe, on March 21st, on Monday, March 21st. So, Tim, the real reality of what has happened to Randy is that everything he promised, that of civil liberties being ignored. And again, for those people who are vaccinated, maybe you're just sitting around going, it's just no big deal. Like, it doesn't affect me. There are Canadians right now who just, they cannot get on a plane to go out west. They cannot get a plane to go out east. They can't go south. They can't fly out of this country, and they can't travel on rail in this country simply because they were hesitant about an experimental vaccine, which, by the way, has proven itself to be useless time and time again. You know, it's just so exciting when someone emails us and said, I'm triple vaccinated and I got COVID last week. Yeah. You know, I'm standing 15 feet on a platform and I still find myself falling to the ground. I don't know why my legs are broken, or maybe the platform wasn't sturdy. Tim, I just want to read how absurd the mandatory, I'm reading right from the Canadian, the travel.gc.ca website. Listen to this. If you're 12 years of age plus 4 months or older, you'll need to be fully vaccinated in order to board. 12 years of age plus 4 months. Like, how minuscule, how microscopic our liberties are being trampled upon, like at a monthly basis.
It's the same rotten root that affects all of these policies. The belief that the government, that this bureaucracy can manage down to the day and the month the concerns and health ramifications for Canadians. And for them, their only consideration, obviously, is time. Well, this is an easy standard. We can get everybody under this cutoff into the system. You know, never mind an individual's health situation or pre-existing conditions or, you know, liabilities to other ailments and maladies. It just, the government cannot manage healthcare. It cannot manage healthcare decisions. It cannot manage the economy. It's not the government's job to do so. These are things that just Canadians need to shake themselves loose of this paradigm, because the more coercive the government becomes, the more criminalized people like Randy Hillier becomes. Now, this mask thing, you can't talk about masks on social media. You have to recognize people have been calling for this for actually, I will dare say, years. People have now been calling for this for years against Randy. They've wanted to shut him up for years, and they finally have something that they can do it with, and that is his arrest. They can finally shut him up because he is a thorn in their side, and he is a burr in their saddle, and his outspoken, anti-regime words are just intolerable. So this is what it is. It's silencing political opposition. So this, again, it's a paradigm for where Canada is going and what it will cost you to say what you believe and to actually criticize the government, to participate in a movement that is criticizing of the government. This is what it will cost you in Canada. And I think that's why this is just so deeply concerning to us. And if Randy pulled down, you know, a guard fence and he gets fined $500 for it, that's not the issue. It's the bigger picture, okay? It's not whether or not, you know, he put out his cigarette in a place that you're not allowed to butt out in Ottawa. That's insignificant. And I don't care what you think about Randy's, you know, this tweet or that tweet or what he said at the convoy. It's the whole picture of how the government and its law enforcement arm is now going to deal with people who are outspoken dissidents and critics of the government. And it's... we're going to talk about censorship next week and the Heritage Minister's new bill and how that's going to affect free speech. These are the walls really tightening up around Canadians in terms of what's acceptable and what is, quote, free. It's all being redefined very rapidly.
And again, for people who don't care about liberty, I guess they just don't care. And they slowly let, you know, these... 70,000 different little papers of change. And then maybe one day they wake up and go, oh my goodness, I literally can't do anything. But that's not the world that was created for us at the inception of the United States Declaration of Independence and the Canadian Constitution. That's not the world that our forefathers desired when they immigrated to these new lands, and when they brought law and order, and when they agreed and they made the Mayflower Compact agreement, it's not the vision of this country that we have had growing up. It has been this sleight of hand, this replacement of that vision by Justin Trudeau, who continues to say that he has that vision. But of course, he and his father have changed the vision, maybe using similar language. And Tim, I want to just wind up today really quick with the third story. And this is just, you know, praise the Lord, we have a brave Quebec church who is suing the provincial government for COVID-19 restrictions. And, you know, we've talked a lot about heavy things. Well, I just want to thank the Lord for this church, and I want to thank the Lord for the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. So the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms will be representing the Baptist Church of St. Augustine and Pastor Reverend Gilles Roy. According to the JCCF, Pastor Roy's application argues that COVID-19 jab passports, quote, violate charter-protected freedoms of religion, conscience, association, and peaceful assembly, and the right to bodily autonomy. Pastor Roy's application for judicial review also seeks the court to rule on the government's failure to consolidate new decrees and orders, which made it impossible for the average citizen to understand the law. Wow, you and I have been talking about that a lot, Tim, haven't we? Oh, the law changes here today and it changes here tomorrow. How many people reached out to me and said, what do you have to do to get back over the Canadian border? Because when they heard that I had gone on vacation for a few weeks, like, we don't know how to get back into Canada? Yeah, it's because it's ridiculous getting and following all of the new little legislative little arms. It's, you know, we've got Karen at the end of her computer doing her darndest to make it utterly confusing. Okay, I'm going to move on though, and I'm going to leave you to the last comment here. So the article that I'm reading from LifeSite News, and we're thankful for LifeSite News as well, it finishes with this. It finishes with a quote from Roy. Roy says, we are asking the courts to sanction the abuses committed by the provincial authorities. Never again should we accept that medical officers trade their white coats for sergeant's uniforms and in sort of a germophobic delirium close churches. Good for him. This is how he finishes off. It's very important because you and I have been saying it for 2 years. Or as long as we've had the podcast. It feels like 2 years. It might be more, it might be less. The churches are the people's sanctuaries, not the enforcement arm of the government. Wow. How often have I said to our local health units, our church is a place of refuge for our people. Our church is a place to share people the good news of Jesus Christ, which is hope of the resurrection, even if they die. And therefore, it is ludicrous to shut our churches in order to enforce any of your laws, let alone laws that we conscientiously and fundamentally disagree with and religiously disagree with. So I'm thankful for this church standing up, and I hope that they have success in the province of Quebec.
That's so important that those things are happening, because whatever the outcome, you get legislative clarity. So you get judicial clarity. You get to figure out where things are headed. And that's going to be the case with Randy as well. When they're actually going to test these documents against real world examples, you're going to find out what freedom truly will be enforced here in Canada or upheld or protected. But My last word is similar to things I say most episodes, and that is, when you're dealing with these ideologies, this climate change liturgy, and with those who think that Randy Hillier is genuinely a criminal, and there are many in Canada who genuinely believe that, they've been saying he should be in jail for years now. So when you're dealing with let's call it the other side, although we think of them compassionately, we don't pretend that we think the same, you cannot play the game that they want you to play. You cannot concede the premise of what they're saying. I talk about this every show. You can't examine the premise of what's being offered. So the premise of this climate change is that the world is going to end, that civilization is going to be extinct, that the oceans are going to boil, and that we're all going to be underwater in a decade. So if the government doesn't spend $50 billion a year on clean energy, then there's no survival. So we don't end up debating. We end up fine-tuning the remedies because we never address or confront the premises. And so you need to think more about the premises of what's being presented, and what is the foundation that they're building these ideologies on? Same thing with Randy Hillier. What is the premise of arresting him? The premise is you cannot participate in that which criticizes or even obstructs the government in its evil doings, because the government is inherently doing the right thing. So you have to examine the premises.
Tim, I know I said I'd give you the last word, but
you do this every week.
I do not. You go back and listen to podcasts. If I say I'm going to give you the last word, I give it to you. Maybe.
I challenge our listeners. Okay, go. Sorry.
I challenge you. Okay. But the point that you're making, Tim, I want to quickly move to the last part. The premise of closing the churches was always that it was more important, it was more loving to keep people safe, whether or not you believed you were doing it or not, because most people and most pastors were like, I don't believe I'm keeping my people any safer. I'm just not getting into trouble. I'm making them feel like I am, and I'm not getting into trouble. And then number two, the premise is it's more important to people safe. It's more loving than to preach the gospel to them, which has never, ever been like, you know, don't go on missions. Why? Because we want to keep you safe. No, wait, we send people on missions, whether it's safe or not, because it's because there's a higher cause.
Health, yeah. So the last thing I want to say is accept the shame of being an outsider. You need to be ready to accept that shame, because you will be treated like Randy, like the churches. Try to argue against clean energy the way it's being pursued in public politics, and see where that gets you at your local town council. So you're going to be shamed. You're going to be vilified. You're going to be called far right. You just accept the shame, because we're never going to move the conversation where it needs to go by playing within the rules of what is acceptable dialogue.
And if you are a new listener and you've been involved in a church that's been closed, never accept the premise again that the government has your best evangelistic doctrinal social communal pastoral all of these other ideas in mind. The church must be open to be a refuge for the needy and the lost, and it must be open to preach the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. And never accept that premise again, that we're here, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. If those words contradict what the word of God says, which is simply meet together and encourage one another as the day approaches, then you meet together and you encourage one another as the day approaches.
And what did they say of Christ when he first began his public ministry? It says that they marveled at his words because he spoke as one having authority. So you need not be ashamed that when you come from the biblical perspective, you will be noticed, you will stand out like a sore thumb, and you will be either loved or hated. And that is not for you to worry about, because obviously, how was Christ treated by those who hated him when he spoke with authority? He spoke with the wisdom of God into all these situations and scenarios. And of course, that's our model. That we don't fit within the parameters of acceptable dialogue on any given day. And that's okay. And we need to learn to be comfortable with that language and that position in our communities. And so that's it from me. Mike, unless you have a burning word, I'll sign off for us. We appreciate everything. Don't forget to catch up on Open Mic with Mike Thiessen this Saturday, releases every Saturday. And then, of course, keep up with Liberty Dispatch Tuesdays and Thursdays, or Wednesdays and Fridays, whichever it comes out on. But keep up with us. And we look forward to some great stuff coming up next week. Thanks for joining us, listener, on Liberty Dispatch. We will see you soon.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.